Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Save big money in your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect finish for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and get your painting project started today. Save big money
at Menards. Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Obviously, the other part of the Rex Heuermann story is Rex Heuermann. He spent nearly 3 years fighting every single charge that was being brought against him and then living more than 20 incognito, if you will. His defense team lost every motion, DNA, separate trials, the entire framework challenge. Then in a 30-minute hearing, the man who swore he didn't do it pled guilty to 7 murders and admitted to an 8th victim nobody knew was coming. His attorney called it a calculated pivot. But what did Heuermann actually gain by making it? And is he accepting responsibility or managing the narrative one final time? Bob Monta, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, is with Robin and myself as we break all this down. Let's talk about that. The calculated pivot. Like every pretrial motion was denied. The DNA challenge, the motion to separate the cases, all of it. When a defense attorney loses every legal avenue that they have, what does the calculus actually look like behind the closed doors? And how much of this decision do you think was Heuermann saying, okay, it's time to come clean, versus his attorney going, we ain't got no roads to go down here, my friend?
I think it was a combination of both.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, whether or not he's going to plea is completely Heuermann's decision.
Sure.
All his attorney could do is advise him. But yeah, after you, because you have two things going against you. One, you have the weight of the evidence and the strength of it. And, you know, any competent attorney looking and say, we got problems here. Look, I'm going to try to get, I'm going to file some motions to suppress. I'm going to try to do some different things. The motion to sever was huge. You know, I mean, when they lost that, you know, when you have the cases bootstrapped to one another, you know, it creates an almost unwinnable situation, because that helps boost along the cases that may not have as much powerful evidence as the other ones, because you're trying them all at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, jurors aren't going to be able to compartmentalize those cases in their head as they're hearing all the evidence coming in. They're going to look at them as a group, even though there may have been years in between the homicides. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's that shit that Robin loves. It's the psychology. Oh, it really is. You know, so when you lose that motion to sever, and you know they're trying all the cases together, that's a massive gut blow. But on top of that, when you find out all the DNA is coming in, like it's the one too, right? You DNA is coming in, we're screwed here. And then the other part of it is they're trying all these cases together. A good attorney is going to go to his client and say, we're fucked.
Yeah.
Pardon my French, but we are absolutely screwed here. We are not going to win this thing. So the ball's in your court, Rex. What do you want to do with it? You know, and again, we talked about this last week a bit, but the fact that they don't have that carrot to dangle,
yeah,
death penalty to pull off the table, it becomes interesting. And I think that we were talking about it, and I was curious to see whether or not this was going to be a plea deal or what this was just going to be a change of plea, which we talked about last week being different things. And ultimately, it was kind of a hybrid.
Yeah. It
was definitely a change of plea, but, you know, Tierney went to him and said, look, you know, here's what we want. You know, and I'll try to make some concessions. I'm not moving on years at all. Mm-hmm. Like, you're doing all the time. I'll drop a few of the charges or some of the counts, but you're going to be doing the time for each and every victim. And ultimately, you know, I think either way, Huerman was pleading out, no matter whether Tierney was going to offer or not, because there was that big question. I kept all my friends in the industry, cops, like everybody, Huerman's going to go up there and spill it all. I'm like, no, he's going to go up there and just say he's guilty. You know, mm-hmm. It's surprising to me when I see attorneys that practice criminal law, like, get kind of sucked into the, you know, just the excitement of it, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
Yeah. And actually, you know, talking about the spilling it all, you know, that's what actually was a little surprising to a lot of people. I think it was actually he's spilling anything. So when he pled, you know, because we talked about this last week as well, his only currency he has right now to better his life in any way, because this whole move, I still think, is 100% about him not trying to spare his family or wife, because if he wanted to do that, he would have stopped killing people. But it was maintaining his control of knowledge, control of information, things he did. Yet he got up there on this, you know, when he's, you know, changing a plea, and he actually spilled a little information about, you know, how he did these things and through strangulation. Were you surprised by that at all? And what do you think he's going to do at sentencing, more or less or nothing?
Sorry, I was here. My wife had to sneak by to get her shoes out of the closet. I was listening to every word.
Hi, Allie. Well,
I mean, the sentencing's pretty much pro forma. The victim impact panels are going to, or statements are going to be huge. You know, they're going to be highly emotional. And those are everything that's going to happen in it. You know, your typical sentencing is going to happen in terms of any kind of movement on the sentencing. I mean, we know what he's getting. He's getting.
Do you think he's going to spill anything more details? Because he talked about strangulation and how he did it. No, you don't think he's going to be quiet on it?
I didn't think it then, and I don't think it now. It's right. Like we talked about this, Robin, and again, this is really in your wheelhouse, man. I mean,
oh yeah, I don't think he's going to say anything. That's why I was asking you.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that the dude has, the last vestige of power he has, is control. Mm-hmm. That's the information.
Let's talk about Karen Vergata. That's the mother of two from Manhattan who disappeared in 1996. It kind of it puts another murder smack dab in the middle of that time span from 93 to 2000, where people were wondering, like, did he stop doing his things or was he just not caught? It shows that, no, he didn't stop. There's at least one other one in the middle there. Gonna guess there's probably more, too, but there's another one. Her remains were found in pieces across Fire Island near Gilgo Beach years apart. He was never charged with the murder. It was folded into the plea agreement with no separate prosecution. Explain this one to me, Bob, because we were talking last week, like, how are they going to do this exactly? Explain to me how exactly they did do this.
Well, I mean, essentially what they're going to have to do. So it was obviously part of some discussions that were taking place.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know what Tierney was able to say to Huerman to get him to kind of bite on that and just say, look, man, you know, just give us Vergata. Like, there was some kind of in-depth conversation. I would have loved to have been
able
to hear it. But ultimately, what they did when they folded the Vergata thing into the plea, it really forecloses further prosecution on that act. So essentially, the benefit that Huerman gets is that even though he's – so essentially, they're going to have to formally charge him because you can't mm-hmm. – you can't convict somebody of something they haven't been charged with. So that's going to happen in the interim. Mm-hmm. So it's going to get formally charged. And then when it was folded into the plea, so he might not necessarily have to even say it again. But if I'm the judge, I'm probably going to just, once he's formally charged, I'm probably going to ask him again, you know, just so you're pleading guilty to, you know, whatever the case number is going to be on that one. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, if what mattered to Rex, and we were really trying to delve into this last week too, in terms of, you know, why would this guy plea, you know, and if we all landed on, there's no way in hell it was to benefit the victim's families. He's not trying to spare them anything. And we all kind of landed on, seems like it might maybe somewhere in deep inside of his soul, he cares about his wife and his kids, you know, and he didn't want to put them through the nightmare of the trial. I mean, it's really the only thing that I can land on, but it's hard to give him the benefit of doubt to even assume that he has any kind of decency. Just
yeah, I don't think so. Go ahead, Tony, and then I want to go.
Okay. Just a quick thought on that. Here's how I've been thinking about it this week. It's like the end of a movie. It's like the end of Back to the Future 2, where there's like a little tease for the third one. You're like, I wasn't expecting that one coming. It feels to me like that. It's like, okay, you got me. I'm going to go down for these. But did you know about this one? Almost like, hey, there's more to come, kids, because I think he's in the last couple of years, he's probably kind of gotten used to this new lifestyle of not having to hide it all. It's out in the open. People know who he is. He's kind of digging the attention. And if he can put a little carrot out there for the society that's watching him in the cage that, hey, you thought I was done. There's far more than you know about. It brings even more attention to him because it's not just resolving these seven. Suddenly there's an eighth. And if there's an eighth, how many more are there?
And that's what I'm thinking, too. You know, especially so here's a man whose health is failing, as they've seen him the last couple of times in his court. So he's fallen apart. And so his chances of getting away with this are zero because of what his lawyer's saying. And so when you think about this, so here's the analogy. Think about a very, very extremely wealthy person. Does throwing down a couple hundred or a couple thousand or even more money really mean anything if you actually have all this money in the bank? Because remember, his currency is information. So he was charged with seven, and everyone's shocked that he's actually threw down an eighth and being willing to include it. Well, a wealthy man doesn't matter to them. And so the probability of him having more in that bank, I think is extremely high, because I think that was a real tell saying there's more there, because otherwise, remember, his only thing left he has in life is the knowledge that he has and no one else does. Yeah. So why would you give, if that was the last person that's associated, why would you give the last thing you have in the bank just at the change of plea?
Yeah, which is why I said he was never going to do anything he was thinking he was going to do in terms of spilling.
He's wealthier than we think, is what I think it is.
He's got a mental wallet full of bodies.
He does. So. And it's interesting because, I mean, when you think about kind of the, you know, Gacy went through a trial, but I mean, that dude never fessed up. You know, he never fessed up. And I'm of the same mindset with Huerman that I am with Gacy. And I think that there's additional victims because there's that gap. Mm-hmm. There's this gap for Gacy. It was a 4-year gap from when they know that his first known victim was killed. And then from when his next victim is killed, you know, there's this gap in time. And that's when Carol was living in the house. You know, he wouldn't just haywire. He was off the rails as soon as the divorce took place. You know, it was a free for all. But like the other thing that I want to talk about, kind of go back to Tony's point, you know, and I think the other thing that's interesting is the fact that the amount of tension and anxiety and stress, and I don't give a shit how much of a sociopath you are. I mean, the fact of the matter is we know from his hard drive, getting caught was a major concern for him. Mm-hmm. So once it's over and that stress and tension lifts, it goes right along with what you're saying, you know, because that's a long time to live on the run. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a stressful way to live.
Yeah.
You
know?
So, yeah.
I want to get your thoughts on this. We me and Robin and Coffendaffer were talking about this the other day, about how much of a carrot was it that the BAU, the Behavioral Analysis Unit, was actually worded into the plea agreement here that he's going to cooperate with them and he'll be studied. Now, obviously, the BAU is going to go in no matter what. It's not like you really have a huge choice in this matter for somebody like this. But I'm wondering, how much do you think it was a carrot on a stick for him to go, oh, well, I'm that important that you wanna come talk to me? I'm wondering if it kind of worked in a weird way here, not as a threat, not as a we're gonna dive into you and figure you out, but more like I'm a celebrity and I'm getting celebrity treatment now in his own weird ecosystem.
Yeah, I take it a different way. I think that was tossed in there more as a carrot to the families, because, you know, I mean, we don't know. And I was actually, I was thankful that, what's her face stood up there. I always forget her name. The attorney who handled some of the, was representing the victims' families. Somebody, the attorney of the old time, Gloria Allred. Yeah. So when she steps up and she basically has or speaks on behalf of the family members, that they're fine with this, that they're good with it, they're in support of this thing getting pled out as opposed to going to trial, because that's one of the things you always wonder. You know, do the families want that person to sit in that chair and squirm, and do they want to hear all the details, or do they not? So for me, I was thankful that she came up and said those things, because it really kind of gave me some insight into it. And I think that from Tierney's perspective, I think that that would help soften the blow if you had family members that were very much wanting him to stand trial. Like, look, I know, but we talked this guy into helping. Like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a pretty nice pitch to put out there.
Yeah.
Like, I like that, Bob. I like that a lot. I think that carries a lot of weight. I wonder if part of that with the discussion with the families, whether they told them that we will share what we find with you if you want to know it too.
Yeah.
Because those are things. And I mean, when you think about this, it makes it so that they can hear and get some closure without it being on a public forum necessarily as well. It'll be researchable and it'll be open source and things like that they can get access to, because this is what BAU does. They provide research for organizations and other great crime fighters out there. But I hadn't thought about that angle of it. I think it's a really poignant one. I think it's, I'm glad they're doing it for that reason, no doubt.
Yeah, I think of it from that angle,
I'm guessing. But I mean, to me, that would be why they would include it, whether it's true or not. And I hope that it is true. You know,
maybe it's a little bit of everything.
Honestly. And if not, you can make it true now. You know, if people are paying attention to this, I think the families then need to say, hey, that's a frigging great idea. I want to know or I don't want to know. I mean, it gives them the choice without having it broadcast and have to listen to it. That's what I really like. It's victim focused, and here's an opportunity that you can learn more, but you don't have to learn more. Whatever you need for closure, and you won't have closure on this in the life, no one ever does, but be able to continue to move forward in your life and move on, through, I should say.
100%, man.
Now they just need to bring back another season of Mindhunter, because...
It's dead in the water, man. It's like, I keep hearing like, and then they just fall away. It's weird. It was such a great show.
I know. It's got, it's Emmy nominated. It's like people love, it's like, bring it back. Anyway, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts on that. And press subscribe to Bob's podcast, Defense Diaries, wherever you get podcasts.
And Buried.
And Buried.
AC investigation. It's my life's work. It's like,
yes,
I really want people to listen to it. It's a phenomenal podcast. It's unlike anything you've ever heard.
So. It is. It's very good.
Love it.
Buried.
I'm testing it again. I'm moving back on it. I refuse until the whole world's listened to it. So
and, that's all you want, the whole world. And then get them all to buy my book.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, in Robin's book here.
Like, you know, if you listen to the full podcast, we'll give you Robin's book.
Welcome to QVC.
That's
Oh, today we have a delicious book here from Robin. It's not all about me. This is bursting with country fresh flavor.
It's about
unlike
Bob.
Anything you've ever had.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
The Gilgo Beach Killer. That's who we are talking about today. And the ecosystem around him, because it goes far deeper than just Rex Heuermann himself. The psychology of Asa Elrup is what we're going to be starting with. That's the ex-wife of Rex Heuermann. Asa sat across from the man she'd been married to for nearly three decades and asked him, how many women did you do this to? He said eight. No hesitation. He's been charged with seven, but he said eight. She walked out of that room and still said she believes that he loved her. The new Peacock documentary, well, part four is new. The other three parts have been there for quite some time. Laid bare something most people can't wrap their heads around. A woman whose entire adult life was built around a man who was killing women in their basement. What makes someone hold on even after the truth comes out of his own mouth? That's a question that I think a lot of us are asking. Part four of the Gilgo Beach Killer House of Secrets is now available on Peacock. This is part four to the 50 Cent G-Unit one that was done about, I think it was 2 years ago now. And we did a deep dive on that at the time when it came out. And it was fascinating then. It's even more fascinating now as part four dives deep into Asa Elrup, the ex-wife, now believing, now getting the confession straight up from Rex, and still staying tight to her man, which is an interesting observation on all this. Joining us to break all this down, joining myself, of course, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, as always. And it's Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, who is with us on Wednesdays, who's author of this book, Nightbird, who just got some great awards for it in Las Vegas.
Well-earned, well-deserved, so, and the perfect person for today.
Yes, available wherever you get books. Go and check that out. My goodness, we got a lot to get into here today on this. Let's start, Siobhan, with some of focusing on Asa in this. Asa was adopted into an American family. She says she never felt wanted as a child, was assaulted at 16, and then attempted to take her own life before she ever met Rex. And then Rex, this man, shows up and as a knight in shining armor, I believe is one of the ways that she described him, taking care of everything. How much of what people call not knowing is really a woman whose survival instincts told her not to look too close at the one person who made her feel safe?
Yeah, you know, truth can be very scary for some people, and not everyone is made for honesty. I had a sense of her that the bit of glimpses into her life trauma that she gave us, that there's more. Mm-hmm. And who knows what other psychological factors, you know, you'd have to really get to know her in depth to get a good sense of everything that she'd gone through in life. But she was a broken person when she met him, and he swooped in as a rescuer, and he had an extreme amount of control over her, her perception of reality. And this is, I think, a big piece that has been the struggle for her is, who is she without Rex, and what is reality?
Yeah, which brings me to this question, Siobhan. You know, I was happy to see that she's working with a therapist that I had no idea she was that close, like hand in hand. And also the fact that they gave her permission to share so much openly on camera, which was beneficial to us. I hope it was beneficial to Asa on this. But I'm curious about her goal and what your goal would be with Asa and where you think she might be able to go, because she seems so doggedly locked in. Mm-hmm. It seems like the way she sees Rex, she not only doesn't want to, I think she's incapable at this point of seeing him other than the knight in shining armor. Do you think that as a therapist, she's going to try to move her through that to accept what the truth is of what he is, or is she just going to try to help her cope with what she wants to accept?
My sense is that, you know, and of course we didn't get any, you know, verbatim what the therapy sessions are like or anything like that. My sense is that it was a good therapist. She was trying to work with all the components of the family and gradually help Asa see reality. But that's going to be slow work, because for her to really come to a place of fully acknowledging the horror movie that she has been living in could just shatter her identity altogether and throw her into a state of being a non-functional person. And I think the therapist will keep working with her. It's going to be long-term work and something that will probably go on for the rest of her life. And who knows how much flexibility she has.
Yeah, but or even if she wants to. Yeah,
exactly. I was really glad that she did have a therapist that she was.
Yeah, and she, and totally vested in her. I mean, I was really pleasantly happy and surprised for the family that they did have someone that was that seemingly that close, like almost like living with them for most of this, even from, you know, going to the hearings and everything like that. So and it also can't come cheap, obviously. But no, I'm glad for that aspect of it because, man, she was a lot more messed up than I thought she was.
Yes, I agree. We knew she would have some fragilities, but I was kind of surprised at how fragile she really is.
Yeah.
Is Asa more in touch with reality than the rest of us are on this? I mean, this is someone, I mean, she, I mean, I'm really kind of amazed how vocal she has been about this and how she is, you know, displaying her choices and her seemingly desire to want to get to know the other Rex. Mm-hmm. We're not in her situation. Very few people in this world ever will be or are, thank God.
Yeah.
But if you were to be in that sort of situation, can you fault her that she wants to try and understand more about the person that she spent her entire adult life with and had children with? I mean, granted, he's a monster. He's a horrible person. And I think the two can coexist. I think she can recognize that this is a horrible, monstrous human being over here who's done some really bad things. But she can also recognize that he was not that to her. Wow. And so many of us just want to look at her and go, tell him to go to hell. Ignore him. Don't feed the machine. Don't feed his madness. I mean, I totally get that. But that's not our choice to make. This is her life. It's not for me to say, well, you have no right to try and square this up more in your mind with the man that you spent all this time with and apparently had no idea this was going on. Mm-hmm. Actually, it kind of is her right to do that. Maybe that is the right path to go down. I don't know. I mean, Siobhan, is there a world where it is not a horrible path? I mean, for healing for her, not for the dynamics and the optics of all of us out here judging, but for her own healing to take that ride, to take that road and go meet with Rex to whatever boundary she wants to set up, but to learn who that man is. And I don't know what the end goal is, if it's to be continuing that relationship when she's gotten whatever she thinks she's going to get out of him in terms of information, or if it's just to go down that road, pick up that book and close it when she feels that it's complete. I don't know that she would know when to close that book to feel when it's complete. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you put that really well. We've all got a path. I mean, life is going to traumatize everybody in some way. Hopefully not this way. Mm-hmm. But we've all got to figure out what's our path through it. What are we going to do to survive? And if I were working with her, I would want to honor the process that she's on. But I have to admit, on a gut level, it's very unsettling.
It is.
Listening to their warm phone calls where, you know, he has this he has this weird thing of, hello, dear. And it just, you know, it kind of makes your skin crawl. And I have seen many, many women who have been married to someone far less cruel and aberrant, and maybe they commit a crime of some kind, and the wives are done. They're just done. You know, this is not who I thought he was, and I'm never talking to him again. I'm divorcing him. And it's, I always feel better, you know, when people go that direction, but these are people who are probably have a stronger personality, who can go on and build life apart from that person. And I personally feel better when I see that happen. You know, they change their name, they maybe move across the country, and they say, I am erasing that, you know. But yeah, she does seem to still be in this early phase of trying to make sense of it, trying to put the truth together. But the thing that really, the piece that I don't think she has fully integrated yet, if at all, is that he was a sadist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sadist. And just about the worst kind of sadist that we can imagine. And the way he tortured his victims. I mean, I cannot wrap my head around having any kind of a bond with a sadist.
Yeah.
And so I think that the ultimate goal for her would be able to fully recognize that and slide out of the denial and be able to separate herself from him. I mean, I think that would be a really good thing.
Yeah, that was probably, you know, to keep building on that, the most shocking thing I heard throughout that entire episode was when she said, I want to get to know that man. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, good God. Right. But it also sparked another question in my mind with it that I'm curious about, Siobhan, and that is, he's kind of insinuated and presented a bifurcation of who he is. And she's accepted it and also built it in. That's why she said she wants to get to know that man that she doesn't know, because I know him as a loving family man. She kept using the word family man. Is it actually possible for a psychopath to have two sides, or are they just psychopaths that know how to play the game with who they're engaging? Because to me, I thought when you actually have high level psychopathy, you're just putting on a show 24/7. Is that the way it actually is? Or is that actually a chance that there is actually is two sides to him?
I agree with you completely. I think a good psychopath can play two roles. They can play the loving father. They may not play it very well, but they try. Some of them are better at it than others. But the degree of obsession that we have seen with him, the way he kept those detailed notes and did his planning and planned everything when she was going to be out of town. I mean, the planning showed an obsessive person. This is a person who was thinking about it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And
loving every minute of it.
Loving every minute of it. This was his addiction. And
his playtime.
Yeah.
And think about the fact that he gave himself a marriage to someone with zero guardrails. The only guardrail he had, what made it part of his fun fantasy, was we can only play when I get them out of town. And then I have 3 whole days. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the room in the basement that we've learned was the kill room. That makes it the horror story even worse than I think most of us could even have imagined. So I always wondered, like, did that actually anything go on in the house? Well, it turns out it did.
All of it, or at least those parts of it.
Yeah.
Maybe
and
more.
I think the part that so many are holding on to in this documentary, and I'm sorry if I'm spoiling it for anyone, but Asa, and I don't believe she still is, I could be wrong, but for what's portrayed in the documentary, she's sleeping in the kill room. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have to be sleeping in the kill room. Mm-hmm. Like, the basement, if you watch the doc, the original one, there's 4 episodes. The first 3 were recorded about a year or two ago, and the basement was still in kind of disarray. Well, they've gotten that redone. It's they got a bunch of shiplap up, and it looks different, and it looks
look
like
we did it.
It looks like Joanna Gaines came in, and then they rehoarded it. So it's HGTV with more hoarders, and it looks different than it used to. But Asa just really explain why she decided to stop sleeping in the bedroom that she was sleeping in. But she put in, she made a new bedroom in Rex's old childhood bedroom, which was the kill room. And she sleeps down there. Mm-hmm. And she talks about feeling a kind of a connection there, and that it's, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but like, I don't know, therapeutic. What the hell? I guess that's what I'm getting to is what the hell? Because that's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. You're going and sleeping in the room that your husband killed all these women in, and you're filling it with Beanie Babies, and it looks like childhood, like children's toys. When
she
you
put
saw
dressings
that,
on Nutterville, man.
When you saw that horror show and that moment, what the hell was going through your mind, Siobhan?
I frankly was shocked, and that's one of the strangest things that I have ever seen. And again, I try not to go into it with a judgmental attitude because that's not my job. My job is, as you're saying,
to understand
and to say what's going on. And I had a few speculations. One was, that is this part of her trying to get over the denial? that because she said, I think about the victims when I'm down here at night. And so is that her way of trying to integrate, you know, the stories of the women that were killed? Maybe. But I don't think you'd be sleeping very well if that's what you were doing down there. So also, was it an attempt to reclaim power to say, you know, this is my home. He's not going to win here. Sometimes people do that. You know, if there's something bad that happens in their home, they say, well, I'm not leaving my home. But the other thing that may be the most likely in my mind was, is this a form of her trauma bonding? That this was his childhood bedroom, clearly part of his ritual world. And is there, and perhaps this is not conscious on her part at all, a way to try to stay close to him, to the him that she thinks is the good him? But yeah, all the stuffed animals and child things, yeah, I'd love to sit with her and have a more in-depth talk about what all is this about and how did you come to a decision to do that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Siobhan.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say that's the weirdest thing about all this.
Yeah. And when I'm curious about this aspect of it, too, when she said to be closer to the victims, I wasn't quite getting the closeness that she felt, because I didn't quite feel or see the emotional connection there of what happened to those victims. So I'm curious from your point of view, what do you think she actually thinks and feels about those victims, knowing that her husband did those things to those victims? Is she able to fully embrace that, or is she just saying that? Again, I'm not negating her, where she's at on her path on this. I'm just kind of curious where on that path she's actually at.
Right. Because, you know, I can understand completely the need to put the puzzle pieces together. I think that would be part of healing for her, wanting to learn who the victims were. But I would want to learn who were they when they were alive, you know, not sit in the room where they were tortured. And, you know, a lot of times we honor victims of crimes. What do? We may tear down the murder house. That's what they did. You know, Jeffrey Dahmer's place was torn down. And put a park in and do something to dedicate it to the victims and honor the victims. And you can go there and meditate if you want. Something that focuses on their lives, not on the room where they were tortured.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
And the thing is, it's not her cross to bear. She didn't do these things. So as long as she didn't do these things, she wasn't involved in these things, it's not hers to bear. I mean, indirectly, you know, is it certainly a part of her life? Yeah, but it's not what she didn't do these sort of things. I found it interesting something that she said in that last like 5 minute segment where they leave you going, oh God, this is a horror movie, even more than you thought it was going to be, where she said there will be no closure for anyone. I found that interesting. And I don't know if it's just kind of a figurative speech, because I hate the word closure too. Where it's like, oh, now you have some closure, like nobody ever gets closure. And I get it. Like, there really isn't. In the big picture, these people are dead. There's no fixing this. I don't know. I didn't know if I'm gleaning too much off of that statement or not, or if it was just her rattling off a bunch of stuff and then they caught it on camera and there's no closure for anyone, because there clearly hasn't really been for her, and there probably never will be. What do you think she means by that when she says there'll be no closure for anyone?
Yeah, there were certain times in the documentary where I felt like she was sort of reciting lines and reciting lines that she's been told. And as you and I have said so many times, closure is really a myth. You know, we can grow through things, but we always carry them with us. It's never like it didn't happen. So is it another way of her brain trying to protect herself, that she really can't get any further along than she is? I'm not sure.
It's interesting. I mean, she's got a lifetime of reps in fantasy. I mean, she really does. Very much. I mean, she fantasized about him from day one, and he selected her because of her ability to fantasize this idyllic world that allowed him to do what he wanted to do. And so her reps that she has to overcome to let go of any fantasy and see reality for what it is a lot. I'm curious, Siobhan, so out of all everything that you saw in that, from your position, from your expertise, what was the most shocking thing that you saw about Asa during that special?
The most shocking thing was the sleeping in the room. Because to me, that would be a disconnect from the torture that went on there. And when she thinks about these women, is her mind going back to that? Which I think at some degree, you have to let your mind go there because you have to accept, in order to move forward, you have to accept that this is a sadist. But that was shocking that she would choose to put herself through that on a nightly basis, because we want to see people become more grounded in a realistic perception of the world, but we want to see them start to rebuild their own lives. Who are they? And what kinds of things can she do to develop herself that are not centered around this misperception of the past? Because he really did control her perception of reality. And it would be lovely, I hope, in the future, you know, this has not still been really that long. 33 months is, you know, relatively recent.
Tip of this iceberg, right?
Yeah. And so I hope in the future that she can move beyond the need to sleep there, the need to have phone calls with him, not needing to accept that, because her affect still changes when he's on the phone. Hello, dear.
Yeah.
And you see that attachment that she still has. And it would be wonderful to see her say, I do not need to be attached to a sadist, and develop her own life.
Well, one follow-up to that, Siobhan, I'll put you on a spot as a therapist on this one, as we always do anyway. If you were her therapist and you heard her now tell you, yeah, I'm sleeping down in the bedroom after I remodeled it, what would be your first question to her? What would be the first thing you'd say? I'm just curious. If I can put you on the spot.
Oh, you can always put me on the spot. I don't know that I'll be cogent in it. because it would probably be something that would flow out of the conversation of, how are you managing? What is soothing to you? What are you perceiving now? But I tend to, when people are open to my advice, I tend to lean toward cutting ties with toxic people.
Right.
And understanding what a trauma bond is. And let's move out of the trauma bond, not do things that are going to reinforce the trauma bond. So I would be, you know, I can't say grabbing her and shaking her by the shoulders, but that might have been my inclination, but trying to redirect in a way away from that.
Oh, you're so good. Thank you.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue the conversation. And we're going to get into Victoria, the daughter, and also Rex as we continue this conversation. So press subscribe so you don't miss any of that. Substack, YouTube is where you can make your comments.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
What's up, Boos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at chumbacasino.com.
No